can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, Don, we used to go to the football and play in the days when we used to marvel at people like Tony Lockett and Gary Ablett Sr. and Jason Dunstall and even Warwick Kappa kicking bags of goals every week, a thing that is fast and, fast disappearing from our game. But the man who intrigued us and me most of all in this competition of the VFL-AFL football, Australia's national game, was a man who kicked an average, just under an average of 6 goals a game in his career with Hawthorn. He played 129 games for 727 goals. I hope that's correct. You'll tell me if it's not. As I say, just an average of just under 6 goals a game. If you think about that, that's extraordinary. He is a legend of the AFL, not only a Hall of Famer, but a legend, and rightly so. And he is the great teammate of yours and a star in the competition, an Australian sporting star, Peter Hudson AM. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Sam.
My first question was it a lasting regret that you didn't manage to beat Bob Pratt's record of 150 goals in a season? I would have thought after the premierships of anything, that would be probably a record that would, A, never get beaten, but you would probably have aspired to more than anything. Am I right or wrong?
I would love to have broken the record, but as it turned out, Sam, as the years have gone on, and I actually went to Bob Pratt's funeral, I can honestly and sincerely say that I'm glad I didn't break it, because to share it with him is a great honour. And the fact of the matter was that he played less games than I did to achieve his 150 goals.
How many games did he play, Hutto?
I'm not sure, Don, but it was definitely less than I played.
Yeah, we'll check that. The Rocket will just check that. Well, that's very magnanimous of you, and probably, if I may, Don, just before you, when the team of the century was announced for Hawthorn, there was some discussion whether it be you or Dunstall at full forward, and I've got a feeling a similar courtesy in developed between you two. Neither of you necessarily wanted to be named at full forward, but you were, and I presume you're very proud of that, and Dunstall was very happy to be next to you, I think. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I honestly was very happy to be named full forward, but that was picked by a group of people within the Hawthorn Football Club. And later on, they had a competition where the members of the Hawthorn Football Club were able to nominate their best players for the team of the century, and Jason got the full forward in that. So all square.
Yes. Hang on. One was Jason at that stage when the supporters picked it was a current player, and unfortunately, people haven't got memories.
Mm.
But anyway,
fair enough.
What you didn't say in your introduction and show his ability, Peter's ability. How long were you out of the game for? You retired you were hurt in 1972, the first game. So that's five years you were out of the game.
Yeah, well, the way it went, Don, I got injured in the first half of the first game of 1972. Missed the whole of that year. The following year, I played one game against Collingwood in 1973. I flew over.
Oh, that's right, you flew over.
Did you kick eight up until half time, or have I got that wrong?
No, I kicked eight for the game.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but what you're thinking of, Sam, is the day I got hurt, I'd kicked eight in the first half of the game.
I know, it's amazing.
So then I played that one game in 73, but in that game, I now know that I tore the cartilage in my knee. So after having a
But you didn't move, so how could you tour the cartilage?
Well, yeah, I think what happened, I think I did get outside of the goal square once, and that's when I...
Wasn't the fact you were carrying a lot of weight in your ass that put a lot of pressure on your knee?
Well, the honest truth is you're right. Yeah, but Don, let's refer to it as an ample posterior, because the commentators of the day didn't say that I had a fat, you know what, they said an ample posterior, but...
yeah, but hang on, but let's get to it. You were out of it for 5 years. You came back in 77.
77.
Yeah. And still kicked 100 goals. That is just an amazing effort.
Well,
it is extraordinary.
Yeah, the funny part about that was that in that season, when it was decided I was going to have another go, and the reason, look, I can see it now, the reason I did it was because I wanted to, I didn't want to die wondering. I wanted to see if I could come back and have another year and do reasonably well. That was the driving force behind it. But for the whole year, I never trained with a football team because
didn't you come over Thursday nights?
No. I used to fly in on Friday afternoon and be back in the hotel in Tasmania on the Saturday night after the game.
So, Peter, besides not training and carrying a lot of weight in your ass, as Don says, the innate ability to get the ball and kick, it is just beyond belief almost that to read the play, to whether it doesn't matter how you kick them or where you got them, it is just an amazing ability which we will never see again to that extent, will we? Well, we won't see anyone like – we just won't see goal kickers because the game is not predicated on finding people who are specialists. Now it's just everyone is the jack of all trades.
Well, you never know. It could come back in. You know, it could come fully, you know.
Yes.
It cycles.
Yes, cyclical. That's
but
correct.
Hutto, can I ask you, because there was no special plan, what do you think – I've got a theory, whether it's right or wrong, but – what do you think were your strengths as a forward at Hawthorn?
Well, I think I've got no doubt that the key to my game was being able to outposition my opponent. And to John Kennedy's absolute credit, he came up with the concept of giving me basically half the ground, which you know, Don, everybody, the half forwards, forward pockets, everybody was pushed up the ground. And
not to that extent. There's still players around you.
I was given a lot of space.
Yeah, okay.
But the thing was that I used to, and I've said to people, the fullback I loved to play on was the one that wanted to niggle me or go body to body, because as he went body to body with me, I knew exactly where he was. And that, I always think, and always will think, was the key to my game, as the ability to work off the fullback. The one that I found difficult was Bob Murray, because he didn't play me body on body. It was judgment against judgment, and he played a very similar game to what I did. And people say, who's the best fullback you've played on? And I always say Bob Murray, because he was the one I found the hardest to beat. The one I would have hated to have played on, Don, in a match was Kel Moore.
Yeah, but you played on him.
Yeah, but he was a very good fullback.
Well, that's another. I'll bring that. Well, while we're talking about that, well, I'll bring that up, because you played against him in a state game, and were you assisted by the umpire that particular day? You kicked. I think it was down in Tasmania. I was there, and I think you kicked 8 goals from memory, but I just thought some of those free kicks or. There was something going on. Did you have some? Who was the umpire?
Well, it went like this: that most of the goals I did kick on that day, Don, were free kicks.
And, that's right.
Yeah, and Kel said to me after the game, he said, "What are you doing tonight, Hutto?" I said, "I'll be out at my hotel." He said, "I'll come out and see you." I said, "Well, that'd be nice, you know, the old teammate and all that sort of stuff." And he came out and he said to me, "Hutto," he said, "today," he said, "I didn't mind you kicking a bag of goals, a nice bag of goals." He said, "But I didn't mind that you got quite a few of them from free kicks." He said, "But when I found out the umpire was your bar manager," he said, "I thought that was a bit much."
Yeah. So, Don, I'm sorry for talking off air to the Rocket. We're trying to establish how many games Bob Pratt played. What was your theory? 21 games. How
many did you play? 127. No, in that year you would have played.
We played 22 finals.
Yeah, we played two finals and 22 games.
I knew, I know it was less than I played, yeah, but I couldn't...
Well, marginally less.
Yes.
Hutto, can I get back to football? Did you...
That was football.
Well, I understand, but no, I'm more interested in... because
besides football yet, Don.
He is really quite methodical in the way he went about it. Did you, at training, know the strengths and weaknesses of the players that were in the team with you, what they were capable of doing, when they would do certain things, when you would move... Because there was a lot of anticipation. There was, as I said to you, there was we weren't delivering the ball to you. We'd just get it down there as quick as we could.
Mm. Yeah, and that was the key to our game. Like John Kennedy would say, you know, just get it down there as quickly as you can. But the thing was that...
Yeah, but were you aware of the characteristics of the strengths of the players up the ground who, in the way they delivered the ball down the ground?
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, like I knew exactly how Des Marr kicked the ball.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Exactly how Bob Keddie kicked it. And, I mean, I think it's, crikey, you two guys have played a heck of a lot of football, but the key to it is to get that fraction of an advantage over the fullback. And by knowing how Crumo and Bob Keddie and the likes and Des Marr kicked the ball, quite often... I was able to read that and give me that half a yard, and that's all I needed. But that was just through, I suppose, practice of playing together.
Well, the player we played on, Jeff Angus, I always, if he ever went onto his left foot, I knew it'd go to the left-hand side of his body. He'd never hook it, it'd kind of go one way. That's what I was trying to get at. The other thing, what about when you're lining up for goal? Was there a routine you went through, and what did you actually do? It wasn't just a matter of lining up and kicking. There would have been a routine.
Yeah, very much so. A very strict structure, I called it. And it came to me via a chap in Tasmania, Trevor Leo, who coached Tasmania in the 1966 Carnival. I was having a bit of a run of outs. And he took me out one night after training and just said, look, we worked one-on-one. And as a result of that, I came up with what I call the Trevor Leo method of kicking for goal. And basically, I mean, it was just a straight line, everything in a straight line. No running off the line or anything like that. And he taught me that, and I've taught a lot of people that over time. Spent a lot of time with Stewie Lowe, and that's what I worked on, was the straight line method. And we trained one morning at St Kilda. I spent 4 years at St Kilda with Kenny Sheldon, and we trained one morning in the freezing cold and dew all over the ground, and we must have been getting punished for something by Ken, but out we went. And Stewie Lowe, who at this stage had really improved his kicking, Stan Elves worked a lot on it, I worked a lot on it, and he was running in and he was kicking and the ball was going to the left. So he's a right footer, ball's going to the left. To me, 9 times out of 10, that means you've run off the line and you've run out to the right and nature
hooked it,
takes over and you hook it to adjust. And Stewie, I said to Stewie, I think you're running off the line. He said, I don't think I am, because he knew the method at this stage. He knew it really well. And I said, hang on. I said, come back here and have a look. And in the dew, you could see his footprints, and he was running in an arc. And he straightened it up, and Stewie finished up a really good goal kicker in the finish.
Your kick of choice was a shocker, wasn't it? You didn't kick a drop punt, or it was just a tumbles punt that
flat
wasn't
punt.
It?
Flat punt. Yeah.
Had you got to the stage where you thought that was the best chance of it not moving and catching the wind, or was that just the way you kicked?
Well, I think, Sam, I think it's like a lot of things. If you start doing the...
Nichols did it. John Nichols kicked like that.
Yeah, yeah. But you've been a champion golfer, would understand this.
Yes, a golfer, yeah.
I thought that the bottom of the ball, where it was at its fattest,
yes,
the sweet spot has got to be bigger than the end of the ball when you're kicking a drop punt.
Absolutely.
And that's why I kicked it.
Is that right?
Yep.
Did you you figure that out? Or
it happened. Yeah. You know, but as I say, I probably started kicking flat punts.
Yeah, well, it proved to be a very wise choice, mate, just by the fact that we're sitting here talking to you because you kicked 150 goals in a game.
You didn't pick anyone out or a target or anything through the goals. You said the straight line.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand that. But did you pick something? You know, you watch the ball, but did you line it up and try and hit something through the goals, or do you just look at the two goalposts?
No, something behind the goals, Don. And normally I'd look for like an upright in a stand, you know. But I'd never pick the lady. I joke about this. I never pick the lady in the pink cardigan because she might get up and go to the toilet. Yeah. And my target's gone. Yeah. But once I picked that target out, then I would balance myself up, and I had this saying: put the ball in a vice, and the vice is an imaginary vice attached to your kicking leg. So if the ball's in the vice, it's not going to move. And so therefore, when you've got it lined up and you're running towards your target, provided you drop it straight, it can't do anything other than go straight.
Why do you think? I don't know what the year was, 70s, late 60s, but there were four goal kickers that kicked over 100 goals. Jezelenko, Wade, McKenna, Hudson. Is that right?
Yes.
Has that ever been done previously? And I don't think it's been done since.
Well, I look at it this way, Don. Two brackets of full forwards, as you mentioned, the four that you mentioned. But then after that, you had Dunstall, Lockett and Ablett.
Do they kick 100 each in a season?
I'm sure they did, yeah.
Did Ablett?
Well, in the same season. No, hang on. In the same season?
Did Ablett kick 100 in a season? I thought he might have kicked 98. Yeah, not sure. Maybe he did. Have you answered that question, Don? Sorry.
But can I just say something on that? It was mentioned before, this sort of stuff will never be done again, these numbers of goals. But I would never argue the point, but I believe, this is my personal belief, that you put Ablett, Lockett and Dunstall in any team in any era and those guys are going to be capable of 100 goals, even 150 goals. Because they're so good.
But Peter, you mentioned, which I wrote it down when you said it, that John Kennedy said to you, get the ball down as quickly as you can to you.
Mm.
That just does not happen. It is so contrived and so pedantically organised and manipulated that we kick it round the back line and chip it short, that people like you today would tear your hair out just given an equal opportunity to beat the man because you were good at positioning. You said, why wouldn't the plan still today be, if you got the ball, kick it down quickly before everyone can flood back? Or we got this wrong?
Well, and Sam, I'm delighted at the moment, and I might be the only one that thinks it, so there might be a lot of other people thinking, I don't know, but I'm delighted at the moment that the rules are making it that you play the wisest thing is to go through the middle of the ground and get the ball down there quickly, because that's what's happening. And guess what?
You're saying the rules now are going through, directing the players through the middle of the ground.
This thing where the player and the mark can't move.
Oh, I see.
That's what I'm saying. And we're seeing the ball go down through the middle, and we're seeing it get down there quicker. And we saw a young Kaczynski kick six goals for Hawthorn the other day.
Yep.
Why did he kick them? I believe it's because they got the ball down there quickly.
So we might now be recruiting specialist people, full forwards, like in yesteryear, or all those six or seven names we've just mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, before I kicked the 100th goal in 1968, it was right back to John Coleman when he kicked 100 goals. Huge gap of about 16 or 17 years where no one had kicked 100 goals. But that's my point being that you put Lockett, Dunstall or Ablett in those 16 years, I'll bet you there wouldn't have been a period where nobody kicked 100 goals.
Doug Wade, I think, kicked 100.
In the year.
Did he kick them for North when he went there or at Geelong? I think he kicked 100 in a year.
For Geelong?
Yep.
He may have done it at North Melbourne too. Mm.
You've made famous or infamous four people in particular. And they can use this as bragging rights. They kept you goalless. Barry Richardson, Rod Austin and Ian Cooper from St Kilda. And you made famous Barry Lawrence, who you kicked into him on the mark when you're about to try and break the 150 goals. So you've immortalised four people just through...
How does Ian Cooper come into it?
Well, he kept him goalless.
Cooper from St Kilda?
It says that.
He was a half-forward flanker.
Collingwood Cooper, wasn't it?
I said St Kilda, did I? I did, didn't I? Yeah. Well, Ian Cooper, who does he play from for?
Collingwood.
Yeah. Okay.
When did he do that, in 77?
I did.
It says that, I've just doing some research, it said you've made those people infamous. They're the three people that kept you goalless in your career.
I certainly made Barry Richardson infamous or whatever, because I don't think I've ever been to a function where Barry's been there that he hasn't mentioned.
Well, hey, listen, getting back, you said 68, you kicked 100 goals. Your first year was 67.
Yeah.
Now, there was a dramatic improvement in your physique. You kicked 60-odd goals in your first year.
Mm-hmm.
You were very light, very skinny when you first came over.
Mm.
You didn't lift a weight.
We never had any, Don, did we?
You lied, had you? You were the worst trainer I have ever seen, Cutter. But your body filled out. You looked bigger and stronger. What happened? Because you never trained hard. You never lifted a weight, yet the body got bigger.
Well, that ample posterior went back to that again. Yeah. I honestly don't know. But we when you first came to Hawthorn, we didn't have the gym set up that the clubs have got now. So, I think I just probably stopped growing and
filled out.
Nature took over and filled out.
So, what age were you when you came across?
I was 21 when I came over, 67. 21.
So you could have been a late maturer.
Yeah.
But you kicked a lot of goals in Tasmania prior to coming across.
Yeah, and I played in the Carnival in 66, and they were the days when very few players moved from interstate, from Western Australia, South Australia, Tasmania. And, I had a good Carnival, and that sort of stirred things up and, created the situation. Because those days, as I'm sure you both know, there were 12 clubs, and if the 12 wanted you, you could take your pick. And Polly, Sam was the same as John. You could go wherever you wanted to. Provided the clubs wanted you.
Yep.
And that Carnival in 1966...
And paid you enough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Peter, Rocket, we've just tidied this up here. Yep. There's three people, tell them, kicked...
In 93, Ablett, Dunstall and Modra.
Yep.
Yeah. So the years that doesn't line up with Plugger. Plugger kicks 100 all around it, but not quite. And
yeah.
Ablett kicked 100 goals 3 years in a row.
So in 1 year, there were three, there were four in 1970 or whatever
it was. Yeah, but three in 93.
Is that right?
Now, that's a long time ago.
Are you familiar with a bloke called Peter Gray?
Yeah.
Well, you can tidy this story up. When you played in the Tasmanian Football League, because of the number of sides, you played each side four times.
Correct.
Peter played on you in those four games in one of the seasons, and you kicked 54 goals on him at an average of 14 a game. He must have thought, I'm not playing this game anymore. Do you actually speak to Peter, and how did you get on with him?
No, he's a lovely guy. He's a publican, the same as I was, and he's still in the hotel business.
Who did he play for?
Hobart.
Yeah.
And then I finished up coaching Hobart, and Peter... if ever Peter and I were in the same room at the same function, there'd be laughter because the fact that I kicked. And I can't
54 in four goals, the game's on him. Yeah.
I can't remember him ever being moved.
They just stuck with him.
And rumour has it that the coach, they said to the coach, why don't you go down and play on him yourself? And the answer I can't repeat on air, but it was ended with T.
So there's a great push, and you're their favourite son. There's a great push in some circles, maybe Jeff Cannon, I'm not sure, to have Tasmania have an AFL side down there. We've chatted about this for years, decades. Will it ever happen? Would you be an advocate for it to happen?
Well, it's a question I get asked pretty regularly, Sam, because it's a pretty hot topic in the football world, isn't it?
And what's your answer you give regularly?
No, I can tell you. Well, I did a media conference down in Hobart 2 weeks ago.
Because for the unveiling of your statue, which we haven't mentioned.
No.
And well, we are now.
Are you happy, about the statue?
Yeah.
Delighted, oh, you are?
Delighted, Don.
Oh, why? Accurate
portrayal? It actually looks like me.
Does it really? Okay. I thought there might have been a bit of license taken.
There was a bit of muscle definition in the statue that I can't remember having.
What about the head?
The head.
It was all right?
In spite of it all, Don, the head's not too bad.
No, the head on the statue. Do you think it looked like you?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well... Yeah, and even Steph, my wife, she even thought it looked like me. So
Tassie, is it ever going to happen, or are we just going to keep chatting about it?
In the press conference, this is exactly what I said, that every Tasmanian would want a Tasmanian team in the AFL if it was possible. Even though I chaired the original task force to get a game in Tasmania, which happened to be Hawthorn and Fremantle, I think Hawthorn and North Melbourne have done a great job in Tassie. But if it means that by Tasmania getting a team, that's the end of Hawthorn, the end of North Melbourne down there, so be it. The thing that I've always said, I'd hate to see Hawthorn and North Melbourne not down there and Tasmania doesn't get its own team, because we'd be right back where we were 20 years ago. But I can say hand on heart, I hope, like every person that's got any connection with Tasmania, Tasmania does get a team down there.
What about Tasmanians themselves? Very parochial little island. Do you think the parochialism, north against south, that is the problem why there won't be, if the team's allocated or located in the south, the northerners won't come down? If it's up north, the southerners won't come up. Do you think that's the problem in Tasmania, the parochialism that exists within the community?
Well, there's no doubt that there's a lot of north-south rivalry. There's no question.
They even argue about the beers down there.
Well, they've got one each end.
Yes, so, right.
But I think this is only my personal opinion, and I've got nothing to do with this now. I'm not on any task force or anything. I think they would have to play half the games in Launceston and half in Hobart. But that's only my thinking.
And that's a very good answer as far as the parochialism, because they've got two decent stadiums and it could be done. It really could be done.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Peter...
very good. That's very good.
It is very good.
No, that answer is very, very good.
A lot of his answers have been good, Don. No, they have been.
Surprise, surprise.
No, because I think that Tasmania should have a team. Mm. And I'm an advocate because it's a state, it's a football state. Why haven't they? Well, the government are involved. They'll back them and do whatever else. But this parochialism was a worry. I thought, well, where are they going to do? Well, you've just answered the question. Okay. Half and half.
It does seem an anomaly. We have two in each state. And the main football state, probably not the main one, but a very important state, doesn't have any. So it'll probably happen at some stage. Now Peter, you've had a hip replaced, have you, recently?
Yeah. Sam, I've had two hips replaced over the years and a knee. But this year in COVID-19 time, in March I had a knee replacement and in October a hip replacement.
Is this football legacy of football? Maybe?
Well,
maybe not.
Who knows?
But who knows?
Yeah.
Now, the final question I was going to ask you is just escaped me. I'm going to ask it. What was I going to ask you? So the season starts tomorrow. Are you captivated by the game, or are you a bit bemused like a lot of people who have played it in the past, not living in the past, but just don't quite understand why it's played like it is, or are you not one of those brigade?
Well, we've seen a lot of changes in our lifetime, the three of us. We've seen a lot of changes in footy and a lot of criticism of the changes. But I'm one of those people, hand on heart, I could watch it 8 nights a week if it was on telly.
Could you?
Yeah,
jeez, haven't you got a life?
Yeah. No, I love it.
Yeah. Sure, now, that's fantastic. Yeah. Mate, that's the other side of we're cynical about why it's played like it is, but that's fantastic to come from a person who is a legend of the great competition. Don, it is. So that gives a bit of perspective to people who have played it and people who watch it still. Peter Hudson, AM, OBE, Sir Viscount.
You haven't got all that bullshit.
He's an AM.
What are you? Have you got all that besides your name?
AM, he is an AM, aren't you? Yeah.
What's
Australian medal?
Australian medal.
Yeah.
Is that what it means? Who gave you that?
And thank you for getting dressed up today, Hutto. You're the first one to wear a suit to an interview here on.
Going to have lunch with Magic Mike Sheehan.
Correct. Yeah, and you've always got to get dressed up for Mike. Yeah.
Well, be careful. Yes. He's very precious. Don't upset him.
Yeah. He went down to Tassie for the unveiling of the statue.
He did. Yeah. He
wrote a great piece. Talking about Sheehan, he wrote a great piece. Do you remember our teammate called that? Oh, gee, should I bring this? No, I don't know whether I should bring this up. Lance Morton. Well, it was printed. He's built like Tarzan, plays like Jane.
Who said that?
Smells like Sheehan.
Oh.
And smells like cheetah.
Now, can I just get back to the statue? I've got to tell you, you'd appreciate please. This one. All the dignitaries were there, the member, Guy Barnett, the Member of Parliament, the Mayor of New Norfolk.
Any people from Ewes up the road?
You're told
Ewes.
Not up Ewes.
The, so you didn't Ewes come from there.
Anyway, so they're all there and everyone's spoken and it's my turn to speak last. There's about 400 people there, I suppose. And anyway, just as I got up to speak, a guy in a beaten up old ute
went from up the street
and yelled out, "Go the Pies."
His timing his run beautifully. Wasn't by accident.
No.
Thank you very much for joining us. You can go and have lunch now with Mike. And you're having, it's his 70th birthday. What's his name?
Richard Collis.
Dick Collis.
Yep.
Richard.
Yes.
So they're off to have lunch at a very salubrious restaurant, Don. Thank you very much for joining us. And you cannot be serious.
It's been a pleasure.